Hi folks, another weekly update, and this time, for the first time, it's actually going out as a podcast. Well, actually, I have put all the other episodes out as a podcast, but for the first time, this will go out at the same time as the video as a podcast, because I've finally got myself organized and I've used a podcasting service. In fact, I've used a service called Omni Studio. So this is a little Aussie one. I did find a number of different services to help you produce podcasts. And frankly, there's not a lot to it. It's just like, okay, publish an MP3 of this video, someone hosts it, create an RSS feed, and that's pretty much it. A bit of analytics and stuff as well. But I was really, I guess, encouraged to hear that a lot of people did want to have this as a podcast because they want to listen to it in the car or, you know, doing whatever it is they do. So I finally got around to doing that. I've done all the back episodes. I've put them into a podcast. And this one, as I'm waiting for my awesome Australian bandwidth to upload what is now a 1080p video, I'm going to plug that into the podcast as well. So you can subscribe there. I did write a blog post this week that I'll link to, which has all the different details for how you add the podcast. I've put it into iTunes, which was surprisingly pain-free. I've put it into the Google Play Music Store, which was surprisingly painful because I'm not an American. Google, in all their wisdom, has decided that you cannot put podcasts in their store if you're not an American. However, you can become a temporary American by using a VPN. So that's what I did. I became a temporary American. I went to Google Play. I set the thing up. Now it's there. In that blog post as well, there is a link to the direct RSS feed for the podcast. So if you want to use a different app, it's in there too. Anyway, all the things are there. Plus, of course, there's the usual video. You will note, however, that this is no longer an interesting spot. This is back in my office. Last week, I was in the backyard down near the water, which was, look, some people like this. Some people don't. I've had just one or two really, really weird comments that, to be honest, I don't know if I quite understood, but I think I interpreted it as I don't like water or non-office scenes or something like that. However, if you didn't see the last week down at that spot, the thing that really blows me away is how good this iPhone 7 camera is. And yeah, look, usual caveats, I don't get anything from Apple by saying that the camera is really nice, but it is crazy how good the quality came out. And to me, it kind of looked like a green screen. I kept watching it back going, this is really weird. Like, people aren't going to believe that I was really sitting where I was because it almost looked a little bit fake. But anyway, back in the office, this is working fine. So that's that bit. A few things this week. Number one, I had another Pluralsight course go out. This one is another play-by-play. I did this with a good friend of mine, Niall Merrigan. And Niall is based over in Norway. We seem to keep catching each other at conferences and things around the world. He was down here in Australia in August for the NDC Sydney event. And we did this play-by-play called Exploring the Internet of Vulnerabilities. And a play-by-play is where you've got two people sitting there in a room talking to each other and they're videoed. And there's the video of him and I talking. Plus, there's some screencasts, so you're seeing what's on his screen, what's on my screen. Pluralsight put it all together, they edit it professionally, it comes out looking really awesome. What's nice about these play-by-plays is that they're very organic. They're more sort of like this, where it's just talking, as opposed to carefully edited. And in case you don't know how carefully edited a normal Pluralsight course is, on average, I have an edit at most about every 10 seconds. Because I'm talking and then I'm pausing and I'm thinking about what I'm going to say next, or I retake things. Very, very heavily edited in order to have this sort of slick, seamless experience. Play-by-play is very different, makes it really, really easy to watch, but you don't tend to go into as much depth. So anyway, we did this Exploring Internet of Vulnerabilities course. We did things like looked at stuff that's visible on Shodan. If you've not seen Shodan before and some of the crazy things exposed on there, go and have a look at that, and we sort of talk about webcams and open VNC sessions that show control of all sorts of different, sometimes industrial devices, which is kind of a little bit scary. We do that. We talk a little bit about things like using SQL Map, discovery of vulnerabilities in websites using Exploit DB. There's a bunch of Wi-Fi stuff on there. it's just an interesting course in terms of sort of having that moment of how screwed are we? You know, like how bad is the state of online security at the moment? So look, we had a lot of fun creating it. I always do these with various mates of mine because it is fun. You sort of have that rapport and that chemistry with someone, and they make for good courses. So we did that. That, I think, came out really well. So go and check that out. That was one. Another interesting issue I had this week was that I kept seeing these mixed content warnings on my blog. Now, I'm not real keen on having a blog that is very security focused and talking about a lot of things like getting your HTTPS right and then having a freaking warning in my address bar which says something's wrong with the security of the site. Now, I'd seen this a few times myself. A few other people had reported it. It seemed to occur when Discuss comments were loading. And I tracked it down. I sort of grabbed the whole thing in Fiddler, traced it back through, and saw that there was request upon request upon request. And ultimately, what I found was that at one particular point, there was a request to an HTTP resource which was being embedded in this whole chain of HTTPS things. And that HTTP resource was causing a warning on the page. So obviously, Discuss had an issue. They needed to fix it. But I thought what I'd do in order to fix the thing straight off the bat is use a CSP and use the Upgrade Insecure Requests directive. And what that does is it takes any request which would go out over HTTP and it says, no, do it over HTTPS. And that solved my problem. Now, I had another problem in that the site that it was actually trying to make the request to didn't even support HTTPS. But it sort of shifted the problem insofar as a piece of content wasn't loading, which it wouldn't load before anyway because it was mixed. But now, because the site was effectively just not making a connection as opposed to trying to make an insecure connection, I didn't get a browser warning. Anyway, the point of all that is that the CSP was actually really useful for enforcing a secure connection, even when something downstream outside of my control was going screwy. After I wrote that, Discuss actually fixed the root cause shortly after, so it was nice they got on top of that. But now it means that forever and a day, if I'm using one of these services which is appending content or making requests downstream of my site that I have no control over, and that's what happens when you use something like someone else's third-party service, it means that that request can no longer be made insecurely and I have no more browser warnings, which is good, so let's fix that. So that was pretty cool. Another one that I wrote, in fact, I did this one just last night. I did this piece around verifying data breaches. And I'll link to it and you can have a read of it if you haven't already. And you might sort of sense the frustration seeping through. And this is why I like to do these videos, because I can kind of talk a little bit more candidly about how I genuinely feel at some of these posts. And in this post, I wrote about DFB.de. which is a German football site, soccer, as we might call it here. And a lot of people had been representing in their great big list of data breaches that DFB.de had been hacked. And I give examples of pointing to multiple different sites, that amongst their great big list of different breaches have got DFB.de. And you sort of see these sites almost become gospel, right? Like they become the canonical resources of here is who has been hacked. But the point I was trying to make is that there's very little verification, if any verification, that go into these. And someone sent me what was allegedly the DFB.de data. And then I've gone and said, all right, well, I actually checked my facts, so I'm going to go through and verify the data. And I went and asked a bunch of people in the data breach if this was them. So what I do is I say, okay, there's going to be, let's say for argument's sake, 1 million people in the breach. Let's go and compare that to have I been pwned. And I'm going to find the subscribers that are in there. I'm going to grab a couple of dozen of them and ask them, did you use this site? And I'm going to find some of the comments actually that were made when I started asking these questions, because what I found is as I asked around, I was getting people going, I got no idea what this is. Comments like, this must be a mistake. This site does not ring any bells. Someone else says, I don't recall it. Someone else says, I think it was made up by someone. There's just a whole bunch of responses here which just go, nah, this isn't what it's said to be. And I guess the bit that got me frustrated is that, think about it from DFB.de's perspective. And I don't even know if they know about this, but certainly there are some data breaches, that's in quotes for the podcast people, air quotes, data breaches which make the news and are spread around as being serious incidents. And the people making the claims really haven't done any verification. And you've got to be particularly cautious of any entities that make these claims that have a vested interest. So are they trying to sell the data? Are they trying to sell access to the data? And also being particularly cautious of people that have no real recourse if they screw it up. So identities that are out there being anonymous. If you're out there trying to hide who you really are and you make claims that would otherwise be slanderous and you get them completely wrong, there's no recourse. If I go out there and I make claims and I'm completely wrong, they'll find me, you know, and things could end up really bad. And it's not that I do verification so that I don't get into trouble. It's because it's the right thing to do, as is being open and transparent about who I am. So be really suspicious when you see these claims, because very often they are complete crap and it doesn't take a whole lot of work to discover that they're complete crap. That one was crap. All right, so that was DFB. Now, one other one, and I pushed this out this morning, and it has garnered a lot of interest, and it's led to a lot of feedback, not all of it good. So I thought I'd explain what it is, and you know, I'll tell you about some of the feedback. So there is a service called GeekedIn, and this is meant to be a bit like LinkedIn, but for geeks. And this service hadn't actually launched. It wasn't live. But what the creator had thought they'd do is they'd go and they'd scrape GitHub, scrape as much data as they could, public profiles, all this sort of stuff, and create this big treasure trove of data, and they would then sell access to recruiters, and their website has got some sort of pricing stuff on there. And they got it all together, put it all in a MongoDB, and didn't put a password on the MongoDB. So think back to some of the recent things I've been talking about, things like the Michael Page data last week, a couple of weeks before that, the Red Cross data, databases publicly facing with no authentication, there for anyone to download. They were database backups. This one with GeekedIn was just MongoDB with no auth. And you find that sort of stuff very easily via Shodan. In fact, I had to laugh because the video I just mentioned, the one Niall and I did for Pluralsight, the play-by-play, talks precisely about this. And we recorded that in August, and since then I've had so many cases of exactly this. So anyway, GeekedIn created this database, made it all public. Someone went and found it. Looks like they found it in about August, based on the file name. They sent it to me on Saturday, so that would be 6 days before the time of recording now. And I've looked at this database and I've gone, that's a lot of data. And it's me as well. I'm in this breach. This is the eighth data breach that I've been in that I've loaded into Have I Been Pwned. So my data's in there. Always makes it a lot easier to verify a data breach when you find your own information in there. My data's in there. About 8 million other people are in there as well. And I sort of went, okay, well, we've got to go through this verification process, figure out what this is. And as I started looking at it, I realized that, yes, it was from GitHub. Now, one of the things about this is that it is data that is publicly facing on GitHub. My email address is in there because my GitHub profile is publicly facing and it has my email address. You can go to github.com/Troy Hunt, I think is the path, and you'll see it has my email address on there. I'm fine with that. What I wasn't expecting though was for someone to come along, scrape my data and the 8 million other people, and then effectively sell it. And this just didn't feel right. It's not that I could sort of tie it down and go, well, this is blatantly illegal or they've broken into the site. It wasn't that. It just didn't feel right to see that class of data, that volume obtained in that way and then being monetized in the fashion they were monetizing it on. So I got in touch with GitHub. I thought, look, I'm going to start with them because ultimately it is kind of their data and I think they need to know about it. And I spent several days with GitHub going backwards and forwards with the folks there. By the way, GitHub are awesome at dealing with security incidents. I make a comment about that in the blog post on GeekedIn. They've handled things like these massive brute force attacks they've had before and the Chinese DDoS of certain repositories handled them all fantastically, very transparently, very, very well received by the community in terms of what they've written up about them. So I knew they were going to be good. So we talked about this, and a couple of things came out of it. And one of them is that the data is only data which is obtainable via publicly facing resources on GitHub. The other thing that came out is that they shouldn't have been doing that. So GitHub are pretty clear in their T's and C's, and one of the things they say is that you can't come and scrape our data and then sell it. So GitHub are getting in touch with Geekedin, and they'll be having a little chat, I guess, with those guys and letting them know what they think of what they're doing, which probably pretty much erodes whatever business model they had in terms of selling it. I also got in touch with them and I said, look, your Mongos are open. You probably want to fix those. Did all of that, and then I loaded the data into Have I Been Pwned. Now, there are about a million actual real email addresses in there. So I mentioned 8 million accounts before. Only about 1 million of those have publicly facing email addresses like mine. So I loaded those in because they were given to me by a trader. They are circulating, and this is sort of the unfortunate reality of it. My data, possibly your data if you're a technical person with an account on GitHub, is being traded. So I loaded the data per usual, the email addresses, but this time I also said, well, what I'm going to do is, because each individual has effectively a blob of JSON against their name, and because we're technical people, and because it's not sensitive data, like passwords and things like that, I'm going to make it possible for you to get your own data from Have I Been Pwned. So I loaded in just over a million little JSON files, each one belonging to a different email address. And now when you use the notification service on Have I Been Pwned, after you verify your email address, so you get an email, it's got a unique link in it, I show your data. So this means that for people like me, I can go and see what was leaked about me. Not just the fact that I was in a breach, but here's precisely the data. And as I explain in the blog post, this is something that people ask for all the time. And I haven't done it for other data breaches because I don't want to put passwords on Have I Been Pwned. I don't want to put birth dates or addresses, physical addresses, other attributes that people expect to keep private. This was a very different class of data though, and it gave me an opportunity to go, what will it look like if I do give people this ability? Now, I don't plan on doing that with any other data breaches with sensitive data. No way, no how. It's just too volatile for too many reasons. And if you see a site taking things like your password, your date of birth, your gender from breaches, and putting it online and making it accessible, be very worried. Because sooner or later, one day, that's going to end up public, almost certainly. That's probably a topic for another podcast slash video slash whatever it is we call this. So be concerned about that. Now, I put it up there earlier today, so I'm just after midday now. I put it up there probably about 6 hours ago. Obviously, a lot of people have been checking their data. Most of the feedback I've had has been very positive. Most of the feedback I get for most of these things is positive. People are going, hey, great, you know, thanks for letting me know. There's been a bit of neutral feedback. It's kind of like, well, it's kind of positive data, or I'll rephrase that. It's kind of public data, so does it really matter too much? And I get that. In fact, I make that point many times in the blog post. It's public anyway. However, it did come from a data breach. And not only that, and it was a data breach when it's an entire database that someone's been able to go and obtain. Not only that, but it is data that many people did not expect to be exposed in this way. And you'll see already from many of the comments on the blog post, there's lots of people going, I'm kind of not okay with the fact that they had this. Yes, it's public, but I didn't expect it to be used in this way. So certainly loading it was the right thing to do. There were a couple of people that, what's a charitable way of referring to them? We're not very nice. One in particular who's effectively accused me of breaching their service in order to get publicity for Have I Been Pwned. And I don't know if he thinks that I'm making like millions of dollars out of it or something like that, which I'm not. It is a free public service. But just some really sort of nasty, aggressive comments. And it kind of goes back to the point of one of my weekly updates a little while ago, where I spoke about how I handle online abuse. And I said, look, there are some people out there that get behind their keyboard and they just kind of lose their minds. They just get very aggressive and confrontational in a way that they would probably never dare to do in public. Because, hey, when you're anonymous, you can be an asshole and kind of get away with it. I did very curiously notice that when I went and had a look at the thread that had since popped up on Hacker News, exactly the same comment had been copied and pasted. So obviously this guy was just on a bit of a rampage. Maybe he was drunk. Maybe he just had the worst day of his life. I don't know. But there's always going to be an outlier like that. For the most part, very well received. It is just an interesting thing. Not much you can do about it if your data is in there, other than to be conscious that there's just one other place that a whole bunch of info about you is now floating around from. So that was sort of all the main updates. I've got a bunch of other conferences and travel coming up. So I thought I'll give you a quick snapshot of that here, and then I'll put links to what I can in the notes for the podcast. So I'm already saying podcast already. The video thing that now also has a podcast. All right, so I'm going to be at NDC in London in around mid-Jan. I'm there for the whole week doing a two-day workshop. I'm doing probably two talks as well. And I'll probably record another couple of play-by-plays with Pluralsight. I'm going to be in Belgium for the week after that. I'm going to be doing a user group talk. I'm going to be at a Zion security workshop. They're going to open this workshop up to the public. I'm doing a conference one day with them. I'm going to Denmark the week after. I'm doing another two-day workshop with those guys. I did one with them just last month. Massively oversold, so we're going to try and take some of the people that couldn't come to that, put them in the next one. So I'll do that too. And fortunately, that actually, it's a similar length of time to my last trip, but it's only three different places, two flights within Europe. So it's going to be an absolute breeze compared to the last trip. So there's that one. Now I'm also going to be at Microsoft Ignite on the Gold Coast, which is literally like walking distance from my house, which is kind of cool. Oh, a short drive from my house, but hey, it's not the other side of the world. I'm going to be there in February. I'm going to be talking on the Tuesday, then I'm going to jump on an airplane and fly over to San Francisco, and I'm going to be at RSA conference for the rest of that week and talking there. So I've got a bunch of stuff coming up, but I've got about 2 months before I need to go anywhere, which is really, really nice. I'll put links in there though, because the workshop stuff will sell out really quickly. So if you want to come along to that, if you're in either London, Brussels, or Copenhagen, that would be awesome. And the final thing is I've got Securi sponsoring my blog again this week. I think this is the third week in a row for them now. So big thanks to those guys. It's good to keep those spaces filled. And thanks very much everyone for watching and also for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this update and you particularly enjoy the podcast format as well. Thanks, folks.